Welcome to the Negotiation in Real Life podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Davidson, and in this podcast, we'll explore the art and science of negotiation in real-world situations. Whether you're negotiating a business deal, asking for a raise, or trying to resolve a conflict with a colleague or loved one, negotiation is an essential skill that can help you achieve your goals and build better relationships. Through interviews with experts, real-life stories, and practical tips and techniques, we'll deep dive into the strategies and tactics that can make you a better negotiator. From understanding your own negotiation style, to reading body language, handling difficult conversations, and overcoming common challenges, this podcast will give you the tools you need to negotiate with confidence and achieve your objectives. So whether you're a seasoned negotiator looking to refine your skills, or someone who's new to the game, join us as we explore the world of negotiation in real life. In this episode of Negotiation in Real Life, I speak with Ashley Saltzman. Ashley is the person brought in to fix all sorts of commercial problems, from managing troubled projects, mediating escalations and disputes, to contract analysis and negotiating outcomes. Ashley has been described as the man who diffuses bombs, but is more commonly referred to as a fixer, troubleshooter and negotiator. He has over 26 years of experience in dispute resolution in the technology sector, in leading roles at global corporations including SAP, IBM and MYOB. Where he has resolved multi-million dollar commercial disputes. Ashley is also an author. His book, The Man Who Diffuses Bombs, was published in September 2021 and is available globally through most major online bookstores. In our discussion today, we speak about how Ashley came to have a role that was an in-house mediation role, the importance of neutrality in internal dispute resolution, the key factors to make an in-house mediation role effective, the importance of getting a commitment to resolution rather than litigation, why a learning mindset will assist in minimising escalations, the importance of building conflict management skills within the organisation, why you shouldn't run away from a conflict, how having evidence of claims is critical, and much, much more. Please enjoy this week's episode of Negotiation in Real Life. So, Ashley, welcome to Negotiation in Real Life.
Thanks, Nicole. Good to see you.
It's very good to see you again, and I'm delighted to have you on the show. I know you've got some fabulous stuff to talk to people about in terms of particularly negotiation in a conflict resolution space, which, as you know, is my passion. Before we get into all of that, perhaps you'd like to give the listeners a brief overview of who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for the opportunity. I think this is great. So Ashley Saltzman's my name, and I describe myself as I mediate commercial disputes, plain and simple, I suppose. But I do that in the corporate world, not in the small business world. And that's something I've been doing now for 26 years, and probably about 20 years of that in global organizations, which is kind of my passion, and in the technology sector in particular. That's a sector that I've been in for, I don't know, since the mid 80s, basically. So I've seen a lot of change.
I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. But before I actually say what I'm doing now, perhaps I'll take you back one step and tell you what I was doing, because it has changed in the last week or so, 10 days, and it kind of changes what I'm doing, but it'll explain it a bit better.
Fantastic.
So up until very recently, I was working at global software company SAP, and my role was the head of commercial escalations and disputes for Asia Pacific, Japan, and the United Kingdom and Ireland. So in that role at SAP, I basically looked after their commercial escalations between customer and SAP, where the customer may be upset at a situation that's happened with them and basically were threatening legal action or were looking for compensation against SAP for a situation that they found themselves in. My role was effectively to step in as the last port of call before legal would get involved, and to try and resolve it and bring it to a resolution, and I suppose try and find a fair and reasonable outcome for both customer and SAP. And I suppose an interesting thing there was that I was able to be independent, even though I was paid by SAP. SAP. We can probably talk about that a bit more.
I can't wait to get into the nuts and bolts of that, because I love this idea that you've got an organization the size of SAP that's effectively providing an in-house mediation service.
Yeah.
So we will dig into that as we go through the discussion.
And it was certainly a unique job. That's for sure. The change that's taken place is that SAP made a decision this year in January to change their strategy. And they basically were no longer interested in implementing large-scale projects. That was the crux of my job, because large-scale projects that went wrong would then become escalations and turn into disputes, of which that would filter down to me, and that would be the work that I was focused on. The fact that SAP decided that they didn't want to do large-scale projects anymore, which meant that they were now farmed out to the market rather than them doing them themselves, meant that my supply of work from a dispute resolution point of view dried up, or was going to dry up. And as a result, we came to an amicable arrangement where I left SAP, and I'm now working on my own as a freelance advisor in the market, in the SAP ecosystem primarily, although I do offer the services outside of SAP as well. And I offer effectively the same role as what I was doing at SAP, which is to look after commercial escalations and disputes in the market between a system integrator and end user organization in terms of the situations they get themselves into when they're implementing their large scale projects, digital transformation projects, and so on.
Fantastic. And I can't wait to hear how all of that goes. I think it's such an interesting area, because I think particularly it's an area where there's often a mismatch of expectations, because the clients don't always understand the language of the program implementers. So what they think they're getting and what the programmers and the technical people think they're giving them are often two different things.
100%. Yeah.
I'm really fascinated though, because as I said, I love this idea that you've got an in-house dispute resolution function to prevent things becoming difficult. And I'm an absolute huge fan of early intervention, mediation, or facilitation, or whatever process you need to use to bring the parties together when things have gone bad, but haven't got so bad that they're no longer talking to each other.
Yeah.
How did that role come about, and how did you end up doing that role? Because it's a pretty unique kind of role.
Yeah, look, it is. And it's interesting because it's not the first time I've done that role. I actually did that role at IBM prior to SAP. So maybe I'll take you back to the IBM role, because that was an interesting one. It was the first time I'd come across it. So I got into mediating disputes in the late 90s, in fact, when I was running my own IT consulting business. And it certainly is a different world in terms of the fact that this was small business. And it was a typical scenario of an organization, a company that would implement a new piece of software. They put in hardware and, you know, from an installer, and software from the software company, of which things would go wrong. Both would blame each other. Mm-hmm. The customer would say, listen, I don't know what's going on here, but all I know is I'm paying both of you and nothing's working. So someone needs to sort this out. I would get brought in, or I did get brought in, and was asked to try and be an independent consultant and try and help them resolve it, because the customer didn't know what the difference was. So I did that, and that was my first taste of dispute resolution. And I thought, okay, so part of my career, I'll be basically doing dispute resolution here and there whenever it happens. I sold that business in 2001 just because I'd had enough of working with small business and I wanted to work in the corporate world with global organizations. So I then moved to MYOB and I moved to Solution 6, who got acquired. MYOB acquired Solution 6 a couple of years later. But when they were Solution 6, they provided solutions to the accounting industry. And I walked into what it was, a professional services manager nationally. I had to remember the role. Yeah. And what I found was that instead of actually looking after the delivery of services and trying to revamp or restructure their service delivery, they just said to me, listen, we've got all these clients that are threatening to sue us because we're not doing a very good job of maintaining our software. So I spent the next 2 years basically going around the country putting out fires where accounting firms were threatening to sue Solution 6 for a lack of delivery and not honoring the contract that they signed.
Yeah.
Anyway, after that, MYOB bought Solution 6. They felt they didn't need the role anymore. So they said, you know, we parted ways and that was all good. And I was offered an opportunity at IBM. Now, I didn't know at IBM that they actually had a dispute resolution team, and they had four people in the team, so I would have been number five, and they basically were looking for someone like myself to actually do that on a day-to-day basis every day. And I thought, well, I didn't think this job existed, you know?
Yeah.
As you'd understand this, for people who love dispute resolution, because, you know, we get a lot out of the reward of resolving these issues, this was, you know, this was a fantastic opportunity. So I took the opportunity and I was there for 7 years, and I looked after executive complaints and disputes across Australia and New Zealand. And that basically meant, you know, critical situation management, dispute resolution, and of course, just, you know, your everyday complaint that led to a compensation claim as well. I finished at IBM when they decided one day to make 2,000 people redundant in Australia. And they got rid of our, we all thought, you know, we all knew there were rumors and we weren't sure who was going to go. And we all then didn't realize, but the whole team went. So they cut the whole, and they basically said, from now on, the only people we need to worry about who are going to deal with disputes will be the client executives, who are basically in charge of the account. And we don't need this function anymore. So that went. I then worked as a freelance contractor for a number of years. And I took up an opportunity at Schweppes in Australia, where they were delivering an SAP project for one particular product. And I had very little experience with SAP, I must admit. I'd come across them in my IBM days, but not enough to know much about their company and their products. Anyway, I was asked if I would get involved in a project that was failing. And part of my expertise has been project recovery. So recovering projects that fell off the rails. So I got involved in this and recovered this project, and we were back on track and we were ready to go live. And SAP has this rolling product release where every quarter they release a new version of this software. And this is the cloud environment. And 2 weeks before we went live, they put out a product that was full of bugs, and the project basically died on the spot because we couldn't go live 2 weeks later, and it was just completely problematic. And as a result of that, they said to me, so you've got a background in dispute resolution. So I said, yeah. They said, well, we're taking up action against SAP because we're looking for compensation, because this has completely thrown our project and we can't go live anymore when we expect it, and the costs are, you know, overrun is unacceptable. So will you represent us? So I said, sure. So they brought in SAP executives, and we sat in the boardroom, and I took the side of Schweppes, and we negotiated the outcome, and it took about 2 months. And at the end of it all, when it all finished, I had an executive from SAP just, you know, quietly say to me, you're on contract here, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And they said, would you come and work for SAP? I said, sure. What would I be doing? And they said, well, you'd be doing exactly what you've just done here, except you'd be doing it for us because we don't have anyone to do this.
Yeah.
So I said, great. I think, you know, that'd be a great opportunity. So they said, leave it with me. Anyway, I didn't hear anything for two and a half months. And I thought, you know, empty promise, nothing's going to happen. And then about 2.5 months later, I got this phone call from this person who'd contacted me, and she said, we're ready to meet with you. And I said, okay, what are we meeting about? Because I really didn't know what they were doing. And she said, well, we've actually created this role. And cut a long story short, the role they created was exactly what I was offered, which was to mediate their commercial disputes for Australia and New Zealand. It was a trial run, so it was a contract for 3 months. And it was to really test out this new idea that they had, because they felt the need for it, because they weren't handling escalations and disputes at all well themselves. Mm. So I joined SAP with an expectation that 3 months is perhaps all the job might be. That job then got extended. After the 3 months, it got extended another 6 months. So, and then at the 9 month period, still as a contractor, I was asked by the president of Asia Pacific Japan, where obviously Australia New Zealand reports into, if I was prepared to extend my territory and basically look after the same role, but across Asia Pacific Japan. And at the same time, would I join SAP as an employee rather than as a contractor, which was all good for me. I was looking for that. I was very happy with that. And so my role then expanded in that way. And I then continued on doing the work that I was doing.
Yeah. What a great journey. And what that speaks about, you know, the fact that your approach to resolving these disputes is obviously something that is working for both sides, for them to see such value and keep you going. So that's fantastic. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think the interesting thing was that SAP empowered me to be as independent as possible, which was really quite unique. They didn't want me just to take sides, because at the end of the day, then all I'm doing is I'm joining. If, you know, if there's a dispute between SAP and a customer and I take sides, I'm going to take SAP's side, and all it is, it's one more voice added to the SAP side of the fence. And all you're going to be doing is arguing more, and you're not going to get anywhere. So,
which is interesting, isn't it? Because a central tenet of mediation is neutrality.
Correct.
And, you know, one would assume that as the representative of SAP, you aren't neutral, but they're actually giving you the scope to step in and be neutral. And I guess you've then got to sell it to the client that you are actually neutral.
And it wasn't that hard, I've got to be honest. And I think that it all came down to the approach. Mm. So I worked out very quickly that I needed to be that mediator role or facilitator role rather than taking sides.
Mm.
And what I would do is I first would meet with our customer and actually explain to them the role that I had, explain to them how I was empowered to resolve the issue. Because very often the first thing people would say is, well, why are you going to be any different to anyone else that's tried to resolve this before you? And I said to them, well, the difference is that my role is just this. Like, I'm not here to sell you anything. You know, I'm not in the, so I'm not in the sales team. I'm not here to, you know, to try and promote anything. My role all day, every day is to resolve disputes. Therefore, that's what I'm here for. And I need to do it in a way that you end up feeling that you've come up with a successful outcome and that SAP feels the same as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was critical, because the customer then understood that I was going to listen to them and understand it from their perspective and not be judgmental. I would obviously form an opinion, but I would always base it on facts. It was never just my opinion because, you know, because I wanted just to simply get it to a certain outcome. And I also explained to the customer that I would be their advocate. And, you know, for the meetings and the board meetings that I would sit internally, that I would be able to represent their voice in those meetings that they had no way of attending because they were not privy to those meetings. So I said to them, if you can explain to me why it is that you think that you've got a strong case and you think that SAP's done the wrong thing, I'll represent that opinion internally and make sure that your voice is heard. And if I think you're right, when I'm asked what my opinion is on this particular situation, I'll tell them.
Yeah.
And the good thing in terms of being empowered was, and you know, I really do credit SAP in this respect, is that they actually would listen and then effectively say, okay, so what do you recommend we do? How do you think we're going to resolve this in a way that we're okay to get an approval and that the customer is going to be able to accept this and we move on with a healthy relationship that is intact rather than we burnt it and it was gone for good.
Yeah, fantastic.
Feel stuck in a negotiation or conflict? You're not quite sure what the next step should be? Friends and colleagues may give advice, but perhaps they're only seeing things from your side. My new Negotiation GP service is for exactly that situation. You can book a short, standard or long consultation where we will explore your situation using a systematic approach. You will walk away with concrete steps to follow and an increased confidence to manage the situation. To learn more, head to my website at NicoleDavidsonNegotiation.com.au, where you can book a consultation online. Don't forget, I also offer one-on-one coaching, team training, and expert advice on specific negotiations. My tailored approach is designed to meet your specific needs, and my proven methodologies and strategies are grounded in the latest research and best practices. So whether you're a small business owner, a corporate executive, or anyone in between, let me help you achieve your negotiation goals and maximize your success.
So I'm really thinking, you know, there might be some people listening to the podcast today going, gee, my organization could really benefit with a role like this. What do you think are the key factors that made your role work? I mean, if someone was setting a function up like this from scratch, what would be the essentials that they just can't ignore?
Look, I think there's a couple of things. The first thing is they have to value, they have to understand that they have disputes and that they aren't going to be right every time.
Yes.
You know, because you can walk around saying we're always right and the answer is no to everything, but you're going to end up always being sued. And, you know, the cost and the fallout of being sued is significant. So you don't want that, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, it's quite interesting because when customers would say to me, they would always threaten legal action.
Yeah.
I would say to them at various points in time, did you get into this contract with an expectation that if it didn't work out, you just want a fight? Or do you really want to sort this out? And they go, well, of course we didn't want to fight when we started because we expected things would go well. But if they didn't go well, we thought we could sort it out. I said, okay, then let's not make legal threats anymore. Let's just make a commitment to sorting this out together. Mm. And they would respond well. But to answer your question from an organization's perspective, so they have to firstly acknowledge that they need to negotiate these situations rather than always be right. That's the first thing. The second thing is they have to empower the person they put in charge of this role to be able to be as independent as possible and to not necessarily be there to shut down the customer's opinion just because they don't like it. They need to be prepared to, as I said, to empower that person to be independent or as independent as they can be, to listen to feedback that comes back from those conversations that may not put that organization in a great light. Mm. But then they've also got to take that and say, we can do better. And now we're hearing how and why we need to. So I think there's a lot of learning that can be gathered from that.
Yeah.
And then also to work with the person who would be in someone like my role to actually understand what it's going to take to resolve it, as opposed to this is all we're prepared to do. And therefore, that would leave someone in my position with not much room to move because the truth is I sit there going, hey, listen, I can't help you here because my hands are tied, which is not really an outcome.
Yeah, which comes down. I mean, I think once again, if I often bring these things back to negotiation theory, and it's really being really clear on what are the client's interests that you're trying to meet and how can you align those as much as possible with the organisations, but also listening to the dispute resolution person about what the alternatives are. You know, if we don't get this, it's one thing saying this is your bottom line, but if that bottom line isn't as good as what's on the table from the client and what you've been able to try and get put through, then that flexibility becomes really important.
Yeah, no, for sure.
The other thing I know we've talked about in the past is that one of the things that you stepped up to in the role was training others about resolving disputes, because I think that in itself, you know, it's one thing having a team of people who can deal with things when it escalates, but it'd be even better if it didn't escalate in the first place. How important was that training component of your role within the organization?
Look, it was a very important part, but it actually wasn't given as much priority as it should have been. But when I was able to run that program, which was very successful, so it's a program that I designed in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I must say I designed it, but it came from about 10 years worth of information that I pulled together. And I always had these bits of information in a folder and I thought one day I'm going to use it. And then the situation came about, it was quite interesting. I was asked to go to Kuala Lumpur for a 3-day leadership event. And I was asked to share my experiences, what I've learned, what insights I could share at the time that would help those leaders handle situations like that better. Mm. Anyway, out of that, we also ran a role-playing exercise as well. And out of that, it was very successful. And I walked away thinking, there's a program here, so I'm now going to actually write it. And I knew what needed to be done. So I launched that within SAP the end of 2019. And really proud to say, actually, that it ran from then until, in fact, it's actually still a program that SAP will engage me to use in the future because they value it, you know, in terms of the learning that they get for their teams. The importance of that role was to try and help people in everyday delivery roles. In fact, it wasn't actually only delivery. It was also in sales roles when they were brought into a situation that was in escalation.
Yeah.
You know, how do they make sure that they don't make it worse? And how do they actually add to, you know, resolving the situation without going in blindly because they just have no idea? Because at the end of the day, they've got sales strategies and they've got expertise in selling. But when it comes to dealing with disputes, they could make it a whole lot worse because all they're worried about is this relationship's breaking and my next sale opportunity is at risk and I can't afford that. So they go into panic mode.
Absolutely. Or I can imagine that it's quite often the case that you've got sales and the actual implementation team blaming each other because, you know, what's the story is always implementation is like, what? You couldn't sell them. Why'd you sell them that? We can't do that. You shouldn't have sold it to them.
Yeah,
the other's correct. Going, no. You said you could do it. And so you've got those internal disputes that are often as much part as what's going on with the client.
Absolutely. And in fact, it was interesting because I would very often have conversations with salespeople where I would say to them that during the delivery process, when a problem was identified, now it could be for two reasons. One is that the project has been scoped incorrectly and it's going to take longer, it's going to cost more, things aren't quite what the customer signed up for. Or it could be that the solution that the organization has purchased is not going to deliver the benefits that they thought they were going to get because it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And little did a salesperson know how the technical element of that solution was going to work. And now we're left with a solution that's not going to give us half of what we thought. Why did we even buy this? So it's not always delivery, but delivery always identifies or highlights exposes the problem when it comes to light. That's the reality.
Yeah.
So just going back to the enablement program, so it was positioned as a masterclass program. So you actually had to be an experienced person to actually benefit from it and sit the program. And effectively what I would explain to the attendees was that when you see an escalation when you are confronted with a problem that is, you know, you go into a meeting and the customer says, hey, listen, we've got a problem here and we're not happy. You're picking up that situation in its infancy. It's just starting to bubble. The best thing you can do is know how to handle it, resolve it, put it to bed, and it's just a ripple in the whole scheme of things. And then you get on with things and the relationship is unaffected. However, the problem is when you don't know how to handle it properly and you say the wrong thing and you run away from the confrontation because you're too scared, you don't know how to deal with it.
Picking up the phone when that number comes through, going, it's going to be a tricky conversation.
That's right. All of a sudden I told you something was wrong and you disappeared on me, you know. When that happens, I said the problem just gets escalated and then it's like a smoking fire that actually catches fire.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the building's on fire and that's when I would get brought in. And I'd always say to them, it's much better if you deal with these things early rather than being frightened of them and thinking, I don't want to get involved in any of this.
Yeah.
So the program was to help them understand what to do. And there were two elements to it. One was the best practices that you should implement to actually avoid things getting into escalation and dispute. And then if it's too late to avoid, how to manage the customer, how to manage relationships, how to manage the individuals, and also how you should behave to not only front up and actually take responsibility, but also how are you going to keep things calm and how are you going to resolve this so that you can then protect the relationship and move forward? And it became a very successful. I used to do it in groups of no more than 24 people in a group.
Yes.
And over the 4 years, I had over 700 people go through that program.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Across. It started off in Asia Pacific, Japan. Then it was picked up by SAP in Europe. And then last year it was picked up by SAP in North America. And as I said, it just continues to grow to the point where it is my program and SAP know that. So they basically said, well, you know, when we want to keep running it, we'll just call you and we'll keep doing it.
Fantastic. So I'm just conscious of the time. I'm sure we could speak about many, many great things that the listeners would love, but very conscious of their time. So I guess thinking about what you've said that, you know, this ability to handle conflict in its early stages when it's just starting to smoke is really important. What would be your top two tips for people to manage those situations?
So there's a couple of things. The first one I've already mentioned before, which is your behavior is really important. And the reason for that is because there's a trust element. We know that over, you know, it's very easy to build trust when things are going well. And I've always said that the true test of a relationship is not when things are going well, but when things turn bad. And so, you know, one of the things that I've said is that the behavior is on two sides. One is the organization and the other one is your behavior in itself. Now, you know, when I was at SAP, one of the good things was that SAP would always be responsible for looking after their relationships with their customers and it was paramount. So therefore they would never run away, but individuals might.
Yeah.
So I always said to them that whilst you've got the backing of an organization to, you know, who are going to behave the right way, you have to do that too. So tip number one is protect the relationship you have and make sure that you behave in the most professional way where you are there, you give a commitment to your customer that you're going to be there and that you're going to see it through until the end. And things will get tough. You will need to tell them things they don't want to hear and you will need to hear things that you don't want to hear.
Yes. But
we will work through this and there needs to be a process. The other thing that was also important was to keep the emotion out of it. And the way to do that is to always base it on facts. of what actually happened rather than what someone tells you they believe happened, because you'll always get a skewed view of a situation that's gone bad. Because someone, you know, somebody complained to someone and they said, well, I'm not happy about that. We're going to complain. And then they go and, you know, they put in writing and they put down their arguments as to why they feel they're entitled to compensation or whatever they might be asking for. But when you actually drill down, they weren't even there. They weren't party to anything that went on. But the person who told them what they thought happened. And the truth is that none of this is based on fact.
Yeah.
So the most important second tip is always find out what the facts are of what really happened, which party really did do the right or wrong thing. I mean, I know in my SAP, from the SAP side of things, one of the things was that they always used to get blamed for things they were not even contracted to do. And so when you would look at the contract or you would talk to the people involved and you'd say, I understand why you think that SAP is responsible for this, but SAP is not even contracted to do that. You are. So you're blaming the wrong party for doing something that caused the delay in your project.
Yeah.
When you start to highlight these things, but you base it on facts, it takes the emotion out of it. And you can't argue with facts because these are the things that really happen. Of course, you've got to back it up with evidence, you know, emails, minutes to meetings, not just someone said something to me down the hall. It's got to be, where was it documented? Can I see it? Let me show it to you. And therefore someone says, oh, you're right. And based on that, I realize now that we've taken the wrong position. And then you start to negotiate your way out.
Yeah, and I think doing that in a way that helps the other person save face as you go through that process as
Absolutely.
Well, because that becomes a big part of it. As I said, I'm sure we could have much more conversation about this, but we might have to have you back another time, Ashley.
I'd be happy to.
I would love for you to just share with listeners if they have enjoyed hearing what you've said and they want to learn more about what you're doing and how you might be able to help them, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Well, look, they can go to my website, which is ashleysaltzman.com. And, of course, you know, they can email me or call me. So, you know, they should reach out. They should not let it simmer though. And, you know, a problem that they sit there going, doesn't matter. Let's see what happens. We'll just deal with this later. Because we
don't
know
need
that
help
that
just yet. I don't need help just yet. Oh, I needed help a while back.
Yeah, that's correct. Don't wait. Don't wait till it's too late, because then it's a burning fire and you want to try and get in when it's just smoldering and work out how to deal with it earlier and best and go from there.
Fantastic. Excellent advice. Again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Ashley. It's been a lovely conversation.
Yeah, great to talk, Nicole. Good to see you again.
That's all for this episode of the Negotiation in Real Life podcast. I hope you enjoyed our discussion and learned something new that you can apply in your own negotiations. Remember, negotiation is a skill that can be developed and refined over time. So keep practicing and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can find us on social media or email us directly. And if you liked this episode, please leave us a review on your favourite podcast platform. It helps us to reach more people and continue to produce high-quality content. Until next time, keep negotiating in real life.